Thank You for Your Service. Written and directed by screenwriter Jason Hall, who is the screenwriter for American Sniper. It's based on the book of the same title written by David Finkel. For this podcast, we had Adam Schumann on, and Adam served with the 2nd Battalion, 16th Infantry Regiment in the U.S. Army in Iraq during 2007-2008. He was one of the soldiers profiled in the book by David Finkel. Now, I was able to see this movie at an early screening in August, and it is an absolutely incredible, you know, it had me gripping my seat. I think this movie is really going to push this topic front and center about how we deal with post-traumatic stress and brain injuries as a society. And it was really a pleasure to have Adam on and to hear from him directly. And we talked about several different things, including some of the threats that they face in Iraq and you know, how he dealt with some of these issues. Hope you guys enjoy it. This is this week's Global Recon Podcast.
My name is Amy Wilkinson. I'm a White House fellow. My question is how you would define the key characteristics of effective leadership that allow you to go and be an advocate for good.
Trust. The longer I have been in public service and the more people have asked me about leadership over the years, leadership ultimately comes down to creating conditions of trust within an organization. Good leaders are people who are trusted by followers. Leaders take organizations past the level that the science of management says is possible. One of my sergeants back in the infantry school at Fort Benning almost 50 years ago, which is where I learned everything I ever got to learn about leadership, was at the infantry school. And he said to me one day, he said, "Lieutenant, you'll know you're a good leader when people follow you, if only out of curiosity." I've never had a better definition. Because what he was saying, and I've seen it experienced in my life so many times, what he was saying is they trust you. And you have built up that trust. How did you do it? Clear mission and statement, selfless service. People look to you and they trust you because you're serving selflessly as the leader, not self-serving, selflessly. And that you prepare the followers, you train them, you give them what they need to get the job done. Don't give them a job if you're not going to give them the resources, and that you're prepared to take the risks with them. And so they would teach us at the infantry school, no matter how cold it is, Lieutenant, you must never look cold. No matter how hungry you all are, Lieutenant, you must never appear hungry. No matter how terrified you are, Lieutenant, you must never look terrified. Because if you are scared, terrified, hungry, and cold, they will be scared, terrified, hungry, and cold. I've gotten away with that many, many times in the course of my career by being scared to death, cold, and wanting to go to sleep. But no, let's go. Let's keep going. Let's go around this corner, if only out of curiosity. And they'll follow you into the darkest night, down the deepest valley, up the highest hill, if they trust you. So the essence of leadership is about doing all that the science of management says you can with resources, then taking that extra step and giving it that spark. And that spark comes from getting people to trust you so that they will follow you, if only out of curiosity. Thank you. So we are on with Adam Schumann, and Adam is a U.S. Army veteran. The movie Thank You for Your Service is coming out very soon, and this movie was based on Adam's experiences in combat and then his experiences as he came home from combat. Co-hosting with me is Chantel Taylor. How's it going, everybody?
Hey, John.
Doing great. Hi.
So, Adam, I had the opportunity to go to an early screening of this movie called Thank You for Your Service. I saw it in late August. Chantel hasn't seen the movie yet. You know, you can there's trailers out and things like that. But before we get into the movie, can we talk about your military service? You know, from the time that you joined to the time you got out.
Yeah. I joined shortly after 9/11 in like November of 2002. Was sent to basic down at Fort Benning. Signed up to be an infantryman. Went down there April 2003, and then the invasion of Iraq happened. So I found myself in Iraq in March of 2000. March of 2003.
And that was your first deployment?
That was the first one. Yeah, March of 2003 till February 2004. And then, I came back. I was stationed at Fort Riley pretty much the whole time, but most of my service was spent in Iraq. I did three tours over. Two of them were with mechanized infantry, and the last one was just regular straight riding around in Humvees, basically.
Your length of tour, is it usually 12 months?
Yeah, my first two were 12 months, and then the last one we were slated for a 15-month deployment. But
how many years did you spend on the ground?
In Iraq, I spent 34 months total in Iraq myself.
So that's a long, that's a long time.
Yeah, over a 5-year period. That's a pretty high op tempo.
Yeah, and you were there during some of the heaviest fighting. what parts of Iraq were you deployed into?
The invasion, we ran up 3rd ID's backside, and we did some fighting in Samawa, and then we ultimately ended up in Baghdad right around the airport in the Abu Ghraib market. And then my second deployment, it was kind of split. The first half was down in the Sunni Triangle in Mamadiya, Yusufiya, Lutafiya. And then we moved up to Taji to finish that one out. And then my third deployment for the surge in 07 was right around Sadr City in East Baghdad, right by the Diyala River.
And I have to say, I've spent time in Baghdad myself, and I've sort of, because I wasn't there that time, I was there a little bit later, but I've seen the scars in places. You'll know Haifa Street. I'm pretty sure you know that quite well. And just seeing the way that guys, you know, even if you weren't at the battle, you take that iron bridge across and you can see the way that the agency would have had. And I've only watched the trailer of your film. And seriously, I can almost envisage just from that trailer, that street, you know. And I was just thinking about it, thinking it was almost like purpose built for ambushing that street, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. There was some very key landmarks over there that were always usually the hot spots. So it's interesting.
Yeah. You had the Ministry of Health, I think, was there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's my point, is that, you know, it was almost even now, the scars from that the time that you were there are still visible. And it gets kind of to know that you're down there.
Yeah. Not much headway has been made so far.
No.
Right, so Adam, so the movie, it'll show some of your, what I'm assuming is your last deployment, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a snapshot of the very kind of end of my combat experience, and then the rest of it is basically reintegrating home to my wife and my kid, and trying to find a job and figure out what life is after military service, especially serving in combat.
Right. So, you know, I saw the movie, and it was in a theater here in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, after about, I don't know, 15 minutes in or something like that, I found myself like literally gripping the edge of my chair, because I'd just done a show about this topic. And, to me, when I watched this movie, it's bringing out the realities of what an American combat veteran could potentially face from, returning from these deployments.
Yeah.
you know, when you see this movie, how do you feel?
Oh boy, I feel all kinds of stuff. It's mostly kind of cathartic. I can look back at a really terrible time in my life, and I can see where I'm at now, and I can see progress. Another thing I feel when I see it is I see just about, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I see a little bit of everybody that served in our generation in that film. So it really kind of hits home with that.
Right, because not all combat veterans come home and face some of these issues, but a lot do.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, no.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, it's different. Just the matter of circumstances, coming back when I did and getting out when I did at the height of the economic bust in America. And, it was a tough time. And, you know, some dudes come back and it's perfect. And, you know, I envy those guys, but, there are people that come back and the war has changed them a little bit. And it makes life just a little bit more difficult to handle your day-to-day, tasks.
And that's the thing, I think, as well, when that happens, and, you know, and most people that have been in combat situations will have something that triggers it. And it's almost like, say if ordinarily you were at home and you had a row with your wife, and it's a normal row,
yeah,
that magnified because of all the other stuff going on in your head, and I can see how it almost exacerbates everything because you're still trying to process what you've been through, but it's very, yeah. You know, and family members want you to talk about it, and of course you do want to talk about it, but you might not be ready at that point.
Yeah,
you know, so it's a real difficult. It's difficult, isn't it? And I'm hoping that, because the way that I've even just seen from the trailers, and I've tried to watch every single one that's out there, yeah, is that it's not making. I was gutted, but I didn't feel sorry. Does that make sense?
No. I think the movie's really hopeful that it shows that you can bounce back from some serious trauma, even if it's doesn't even have to be combat trauma. It could be,
yeah.
None of us get out of this without some scarring, and none of us are going to get out of this alive. So I mean, we're all going to experience trauma at some point. So I think it's relatable on that side as well.
Really difficult to make a film about this because this subject matter is so could be so delicate at points that you it either could go over the edge where it becomes unwatchable. But
yeah,
this doesn't do that.
No, so, Jason did a remarkable
life. So it's me to say kudos. It's not, this is your life, the way you're living it, but that's actually really a really good thing.
Yeah, I think so.
we'll say we know so.
Okay, good.
So, you know, that's a good point to bring up because, you know, there are stigmas, you know, when you're talking about PTSD and the veteran suicide rate. And I'm glad that you pointed it out, Chantel, where it's not a pity thing. You know, it's
no.
It is, to me, it's just a really accurate picture of what people are facing when they come home. I mean, and everyone reacts differently. And in the movie, when it comes out, people will watch it and you'll see how for Adam, things went a certain way. And then for some of the other guys that he deployed with, things went a different way. In many ways, it's destructive. In many ways, it is not understanding the changes that you've gone through and then how to deal with it, right?
Yeah.
And then I think the United States government wasn't prepared to deal with, you know, X number of combat veterans coming home and having some of these issues and the way, and even as a society, I think, you know, we haven't fully progressed in the area of understanding how to deal with issues related to trauma. You know, you look at the NFL, right? You know, they're studying NFL players who have passed away and they're studying their brains. And I think something like 90% of them have traumatic brain injury.
Oh, the TBI.
Yeah, and it's just it's an issue. I mean, you can get TBIs from anything, but
hitting your head on the side of the pool or anything,
falling off a bike. But you know, guys like yourself, you know, men and women going into deploying into combat zones, you know, continuously over a number of years, you know, riding over, you know, IEDs or being in the vicinity of a blast, being overly concussed in small spaces, these blast waves have effects on the human brain. And if you want to think that an NFL player, you know, getting tackled by a huge 250-pound lineman who's fast, that will really kind of, you know, ring your bell. But, you know, years and years of getting hit by blast wave concussions, that does stuff that we're not even 100% sure we can measure it. Right.
Nope. You can feel these blasts from miles away. You can hear them and feel them, and it sucks the wind out of you from across town. And you start realizing what that's like when you're sitting there 10 inches away from it. And, how do you study that? How do you test, on that? So,
yeah, because the only sort of thing I try and relate it to is it's completely the opposite end of the spectrum, but the theory is kind of the same as an earthquake. So you have a Richter scale. Mm-hmm. So when the earth's shocked, it reacts a certain way. So then if you take that back to the size of a human being, you know, a blast wave potentially is going to have that same enormous effect on such a small, because your brain's not massive, you know, it's not a massive. But it's very intricate. So I guess, and being the sort of munitions, the way that munitions are moving forward and the amount of damage that can happen here. And like you say, you don't have to be in direct combat to feel the effects of an explosion. And even like psychologically for you, I mean, because having a film that basically is based on your life is also, because although it's a great thing because you can get your experiences are out there, but it can be quite scary too. How does that feel? Life, people are going to be looking into your sort of the window of your soul a bit.
It's a little scary, you know. I was apprehensive about the whole thing, you know, because it's not a glamorous story. It's not. You know, if anything, it's pretty embarrassing when I look back at it personally, you know, going from being a pretty solid soldier to my life completely falling apart. So, I'm worried about the criticism from, you know, the stigma behind mental illness in the military. And I'm, you know, that stuff makes me nervous. And but when I watched the movie, it's just so real and amazing that, you know, it doesn't really bother me if nothing else really matters now. I've met some people along this already that are that it's helping. So, and that's all that really matters, is that it's starting to get some talk going, and people are really reacting good to it.
Yeah, because that's, and I think that's sometimes the best way, because I understand you with what you said, going through all of those emotions of being concerned, but as soon as says to you that helped me, it goes away, and you know, that's the best thing, because you'll always have people that sit there and say nah, you know, and they probably got nothing better to do with life other than to, but that's usually comes from someone that's not experienced the same stuff as you. So I kind of, what I try and do again, putting that into perspective, is I look at someone, and if their opinion matters, i.e. I'm respectful of what they've done, or and it doesn't be at war, but if it's someone that I respect, it's like, well, cheers, you know, thanks for turning up, but your opinion doesn't really count.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a saying in the Army, everybody, opinions are like buttholes. Everybody's got them and they all stink.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Right, I've got to ask this before we go offline anywhere. How cool is it having the director of, the screenwriter of American Sniper do your story?
It was an honor. I was a little bit, I was like, holy smokes, when they first told me, but, I still don't really believe it. So one of these days I might wake up and this will all be a dream.
No, you deserve it. It's brilliant.
Everybody that worked on it was so amazing.
And I can't really ask how your life is now because that might ruin the film. So.
Oh no, I don't think so.
Yeah. So, and what? How are you? What, you know, if after this sort of even the process of making this film, how are things for you now?
Oh, they're great. You know, not perfect, but every day, you know, every day is a learning curve and learning experience. But no, I hunt and fish a lot. I have a great time with the kids, and I'm just kind of trying to enjoy all those things I missed when I was deployed.
Find most soldiers that you get most joy out of the sort of natural things in life? You know, I find that things like just being, I don't know, just doing, and people would probably call it quite boring, but I quite like it.
No, the simpler the better. You go back to your roots, kind of. You know, I grew up doing that, and those were the memories that I had. You know, when you're in a far off place doing weird things, that's what you think about. So, yeah. I just try and focus on that stuff now, and just try and keep helping myself and helping others when I can, and I'm enjoying the ride of this whole movie thing.
And you know, I can't really get away with having. If I went back to my childhood, I'd have a face covered in mud. So I can't really get away with that. But you're right. You know, in this, as it sort of helps other people, and this moves on. Well, this is just going to grow this year, so it's going to be quite an exciting year, I imagine.
Yeah, I better put my seatbelt on.
You better.
So.
You thought Baghdad was scary.
Yeah, this might be a little bit overwhelming.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Adam, in your the movie shows the last part of your last deployment.
Uh-huh.
You know, one thing that it highlights is your role on some of these patrols where you were, and it's in the trailer as well, I believe. Your job was to look out for bombs. What was your official duty on that deployment?
Oh, I was just a staff sergeant, infantry squad leader. I was just the first squad leader. So, you know, just as you know, being the NCO or whatever, you'd be they'd usually put me in the front truck for navigation to run all the routes and do all the you know, kind of leading the convoy through where we needed to go to get from point A to point B. And it was a position we switched out on often with the other, you know, squad leaders in the platoon. But it was interesting that I did all those deployments and personally was never blown up by an IED.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I actually my convoy was only hit one time out of all those deployments.
It's weird and kind of crazy how that works when you spend so much time there and the IEDs were such a problem. I know, you know, Chantel, when she deployed into Afghanistan, IEDs, she was a medic, so so dealing with, you know, these blast wound injuries from IEDs. Chantel, did you deal with IEDs on your last deployment to Afghanistan?
We had a couple of different incidents. Like, I dealt with obviously a lot of local national casualties as well as a combat medic.
Oh,
So everyone was kind of getting blown up. But I'll say this about the yield of IEDs in Afghanistan. Although some of them were huge, you remember in Iraq you had the introduction of EFP, and that was my worst nightmare.
It was
so deadly, you know.
Well, you look at the vehicle afterwards, it was such a psychological mind job to see a weapon do something like that to a vehicle. Yeah, I look back at that, and they were playing a good psychological warfare with that one. That one was tough.
Because it's almost like, and this is going to sound really strange, maybe to listeners, but if I could pick a way of our patrol or convoy coming under fire, it wouldn't be from an EFP because the way that you know, it would take potentially the two people in the front's legs, and it would And like you say, psychologically, that was probably one of the biggest
It just turned any armor you had into absolute Swiss cheese, and there was nothing you could do about it. It's you know, with a regular, you know, deep buried IED, you had some standoff with the ground, and you just kind of hope the vehicle got rolled over, or some shrapnel kind of hit you. But with an EFP, it's that's a bad one. Oof-ta. Yeah.
So the EFP was so bad because it like wedged itself into the vehicle before it went off. Is that what the deal was?
No, an EFP is an explosively formed penetrator. It's like they make them, you know, with it's like a concave disc in the end of a tube. It's usually copper, and the blast turns. You know, they pack the back of it with explosives, and it's directional. And, you know, they make an array of four or five of these inside of a block, and they set it on the side of the road. When it goes off, these little copper slugs come out and they turn molten. And when they hit armor, it basically cuts through it like a welding torch through metal. And, they're going just so fast that there's just nothing it can do. I've seen them go, you know, I mean, it's insane. There's no stopping it. And it starts everything on fire. The only good thing from a medic standpoint for Chantel would be the fact that they cauterize, you know, guys would have their legs blown completely off, but it's so hot it cauterizes, so they're just sitting there, you know, barely bleeding. That was the only upside to an EFP. Everything else was absolutely terrifying about them.
Yeah, and like a friend of mine, his name's Vinny, he lost two legs in that way, and he said the same. He said the blood was minimal. If all the, like you say, if you could have a positive, which is a ridiculous thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you try and look for the silver lining in anything. And we used to joke around driving around a sector. Everybody would when we'd get to a hairy spot, you know, we'd be like, all right, we're coming up to the corner. Everybody separate your shit. So everybody would separate your arms and your legs, and you'd move your arms and legs so you weren't sitting parallel. Cause a lot of times, you know, you're sitting in the truck with your arms on your knees. Well, guys were getting hit with EFPs and losing all four in one shot. Yeah. So we would always, you know, everybody would kind of separate their limbs. So if an EFP came through, you might only lose one, you know, and that became our daily routine is just, you know, how many body parts can I come home with today? So
psychological process. What you just described there is completely normal to you and to me as a medic.
Yeah.
Completely abnormal to, you know, if you just sat there at a dinner party and no one would ever know about and said, hey, this is what I used to think about on a daily basis, people would think nuts.
Yeah, they would recommend you be institutionalized probably. But yeah, It's now that I look back at it, it's you know, we thought it was pretty comical at the time, but you know, you're just trying to get through your day, and that's it.
And even at the worst of times, and you'll be I know because I've served a lot of grunts, is that you would find the most humor in the sort of darkest of days.
Yeah,
because there's no way to lift out of that with anything other than humor. There has to be something.
Yeah. And you know, some of the most serious things we found funny, and some of the funniest things we just didn't find anything, you know, but yeah.
That's maybe something about that when we come home is that, you know, if you went off and you do your thing, Dave goes off and does his thing, and you don't have that same, when those moments, those dark moments, you end up dealing with them alone, and you're too kind of freaked out to tell a wife or a husband. That's, you know, potentially a lot to do with why people struggle to get back into routine. Because there's that squad.
Yeah. Yeah. You're carrying around a bag full of weight and you know, being soldiers, we don't want to burden anybody else with that. So it's tough to even unload that, especially onto someone you love, like your spouse or that's what happens is a lot of guys carry that weight around for a long time. So yeah, I guess it's all about, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I don't even. I was just saying, you know, a lot of this is just about learning how to unpack that bag when you get home, that mental bag.
Yeah, you know, it's it's now known as PTSD or PTS, but these issues have been around for as long as human beings have been fighting wars. They just had different names for them. You know, in the in the Civil War, they called it soldier's heart, and during the Great Wars, they called it shell shock. And it's just different names for it. You know, I mean, if you look at the guys who served in Vietnam, I mean, they really had a raw deal because after 1968, the country turned against them. So they had to deal with what they saw and dealt with in combat and you know, in a difficult terrain in the jungle, and then come home to getting spit on and constantly getting
society that didn't even appreciate what they had just done, you know, and they had to do it pretty much involuntary. You know, they were drafted and sent to do it, you know, and that's they got the rawest deal of it all, and it would be it was, I couldn't imagine coming home like that.
How do you feel? Where do you feel like we are now? I know. I'm in the UK, and we have these. You know, we've both our countries have had quite divisive kind of elections of late, and all of that stuff with people disagreeing with different things. What's the feeling like? And this is to you and John. You know, where do you feel like we're at as soldiers coming home?
Ooh,
I know, it's a tough one, isn't it? See, the fact that you have to think about it.
I don't know. I think, you know, if we're a country that, that likes to, help, and, helping means going to conflicts and putting ourselves in positions where we have to put men and women in combat. And I don't know, as a society, I think people need to recognize that that is, you know, you elect these officials, and these officials choose to do these things. So in a way, we're all kind of responsible for each other. So we got to figure it out, you know, how to bridge the gap between the soldier and the civilian, and realize what an important asset that is to have, to be able to live in countries that provide the freedoms that we all enjoy.
Right, because in a lot of places in the world, it's really not like that, and people are kind of in their bubble, right? You're stuck in the American bubble, you know, and it's like, you know, you go to Africa, you go to places in South America, Central America, you go to Southeast Asia, and in a lot of places, like, people don't have clean drinking water, you know? And when people are in those type of conditions, in extreme poverty or below poverty, they will commit acts of violence to do what they think is needed to survive. So, you know, places where people or countries are at or below the poverty line, the violence levels are astronomically high. And that's one thing that in the majority of America, we don't have that problem. I mean, there are places in this country that are, you know, poor and psychologically the areas are in a really bad situation. But for the majority of the country, I don't think it's like that. And I think people take that for granted because you're used to it, you know? You know, I mean, like, without getting too political, I mean, you have situations where, you know, people feel a certain animosity towards, you know, police officers. You know, and there's all different, each situation is different. I don't think you could generalize it, but, you know, you'll see the same situation, or you see a different situation with the same group, where someone gets hurt or someone gets killed or something, and the first thing they'll do is call 911, right? So the reality is in that situation, you're in the bubble. And the second that you need to call 911, you get out of the bubble just for a second, and you realize how important certain things that are provided to you in this country are. And I just feel like, you know, one thing that might help people is if they maybe it's not plausible for them to do it, but maybe getting a little travel time in and seeing how the people live in the rest of the world will just give you some perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of, for me, definitely, you know, I appreciate the things when I come home to be able to, the liberties that I have, and more often than not, you know, sometimes when I'm faced with people who again, I spoke about these opinions before, and their opinions have come from just news articles, and they haven't really, they can't follow up with anything, you know, they may have experienced themselves, and it's just they've read something and then that's it, that swayed them a certain way. And I mean, we're all having our issues, I think, in doing that. And I'm hopeful that films like this
can make
positive that negativity
and
say, you know, have a look at this, because the people just didn't go out to Afghanistan or they didn't go to Iraq or Somalia and then all of a sudden just come back because they fancied a bit of time off work. You know, this is very real. And the thing is, the world's not getting any better.
No, it's
we always appear to be on the cusp of some war somewhere.
Yeah, right. I deployed. Oh, are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't beep. When I deployed in 2003, my wife was 3 months pregnant. I came home to a 6-month-old or a 5-month-old, and in 2.5 years, she can raise her right hand and wear the uniform and end up deployed to the same spots I was, and that's scary.
And I've seen from the trailer, she doesn't like chocolate.
No, she does. They were just trying to make the point that, you know, so much changes in you know, whether you do a 6-month deployment or a 15-month deployment, that you're not there every day and stuff changes and you try and jump right back into where you left off and it's awkward sometimes.
And also from what I could see from the sort of the small clips that I did see, is that it does show the really important role that spouses play, you know, is that
people
that they're at home and they're playing either mum and dad, you know, whoever's away. And that, again, it's almost, that's not easy either. You know, that's like a whole separate subject again, but the amount of understanding and stuff, it's a complex thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So, you know, we got to wrap this up, but, you know, Adam, I just want to thank you for doing this. I know you guys are extremely busy, on the media circuit and talking to different people. And we really appreciate you doing this. And I appreciate this movie. I know Chantel will when she gets to see it.
Yeah. I'm going to cry.
Oh no!
Yeah, it's tough.
Wear waterproof mascara. Bring tissue.
I've got.
Right. So yeah, it's an incredible movie. It is a very realistic view into what it's like for a guy like Adam coming back, you know, after multiple deployments and various men and women like him and just some of the difficulties that they have to face when returning home. And like we said before, it's not a pity thing at all. It's just a realistic picture that's painted.
Yeah.
And, you know, the name of the film is Thank You for Your Service. And Adam, I would like to thank you for your service as well, for everything you've done for this country. You know, we certainly appreciate it.
That was my pleasure. And I'd be happy to do it all over again.
It's been an honor talking to you, Adam.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Likewise.
Good time talking with Adam and hearing directly from him about his experiences in Iraq and his experiences while making the movie and how it's helped him and being able to kind of relive some of those memories on the big screen. But it's done in a way that it's going to really help and open people's eyes on how these things take place, how they unfold, and what people face when they're dealing with brain injuries and post-traumatic stress. So really incredible movie. Check it out. We have a conversation with the director of the movie, Jason Hall. That'll be released in a couple of days, so be on the lookout for that. As usual, I encourage you to subscribe, like, share, download these episodes with your friends and family. Leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts if you're listening on your mobile device. Check out my website. It's www.globalrecon.net. My Instagram account is IGRecon. The second account is Black Ops Matter. Chantel Taylor is on Mission_Critical. Her Facebook account is Battle Worn, the Memoirs of a Combat Medic in Afghanistan. And we'll see you guys in a couple of days with another episode. Peace.
Mm-hmm.